On an historic day in the United States, it's time to take a look back at history. History matters with the man himself, Mr. Scott Washington. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good, Aaron, and glad to be here. And I know that, when we hear that theme, there's a reassuring sense that all is going to be right.
Yes. Right away, but no. Eventually.
That's right.
In the
we
grand
will make
scheme
sense of the world
yeah.
here. In...
Speaking of making sense of the world, we were talking about this earlier. You can either watch the hearing or not watch the hearing because all of it is freely available. You can get transcripts and everything and people's reactions. Speaking of trying to make sense of it, I've been enjoying the pastime of looking up different news outlets all day long and just seeing the wildly, radically different ways in which they cover it. You go to any conservative news outlet, it's all about Clinton emails Loretta Lynch. If you go to any liberal website, it's all about Trump lied, Comey was fired because of Russia, which is neither liberal nor conservative, because as we said, Donald Trump said that on national television. That's not a big thing, or not a big revelation today. But just the wildly different ways in which it's covered. It's fascinating.
Well, you know, and I think that's what we do when we look at history, and we're going back to try to sort out what was going on at any time, and it's just like this. So it's kind of, everyone's trying to pull at and tug at it, and maybe eventually the dust gets settled, and eventually it's presented as, oh, well, of course the narrative is like
this. Yeah.
But it's
not. But that doesn't get figured out
for a long
time.
No. Yeah. But it's really good, and I think it's great to do that, to actually check out different websites, see how different news organizations are covering it, and encourage everybody to use your brain.
Yeah.
Go out there and, you know, you can ask the same questions.
Yep.
You don't have to have it completely spoon-fed. You can actually look at this material and say, well, gee, what do I think about that?
Journalism really is the first draft of history. That's what they always say. What
I
want now, and I don't know if this exists online, if anyone is listening out there who's got some Photoshop skills who can recreate the look of various current news websites, go back in history and just come up with a way that Fox News or the Drudge Report or Vox or Talking Points Memo or something like that might cover events in the past, what they would come up with in terms of the narrative spin.
Oh, yes.
I would love to see that.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, and it leads right into a big thing that happens today.
There we go.
On June 8th, going back to 1789, is when James Madison makes an impassioned speech to Congress suggesting we need to include some kind of amendments to the Constitution. And that has a lot of background going to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Constitution was first passed in 1787 and sent out to the states for ratification, the people who did that hedged their bets. They said, if we get 9 of 13 states, this new Constitution will go into effect. Well, it started to go to state by state. And by the time it came to North Carolina in July of 1788, they actually had 10 states. In fact, in the 11th, New York ratifies it while North Carolina is meeting. So they have enough states, more than enough. It's going into
effect. It is ratified.
North Carolina could ratify it, just rubber stamp it. They don't do that, and they change history. But the interesting thing is this going into what we were just talking about, is how people look at this Constitution for the first time, and they're trying to figure out, how do we approach it? How do we even look at this? And they finally settle on, let's look at it clause by clause. And in the end, though, they realize that this Constitution that they have before them was the vanilla version. It just has the legislative, executive, judicial sections of the Constitution, but nothing else. And that's not good enough. And they vote to postpone ratifying the Constitution until provisions are made for introducing a Bill of Rights to Congress and the ratifying states. Now, nothing new except that this causes a crisis, and history we think is just sanitized, and but you can't understand at that time. This, if we'd had reporters, it'd be like, oh my gosh, what's happened?
Yes.
It's not quite the United States of America. North Carolina, the state that has the fourth largest population, stretches from the Atlantic to Mississippi, is out of the Union. Can you imagine CNN trying to report what the heck is going on?
Oh yeah, no kidding.
The real
and
crisis.
And that cuts off, there's one thing, the 13th state is Rhode Island, which isn't even bothering to get involved in it at this point, but that's fine. They don't ratify. You can still get from Connecticut to Massachusetts. If Rhode Island wants to be isolated. If North Carolina doesn't ratify, splits the nation in half. Yes. You got South Carolina and Georgia isolated from the rest of the country. You can't
have that. But this is why when George Washington sworn in, 2 months later, when James Madison on this date in 1789 proposes these amendments, he persists, and there's so much business to be done that people are discouraging, but he persists and finally comes up with amendments. But thank goodness, their wiser heads prevailed and said, no, we don't want, Roger Sherman of Connecticut is the one who says, we're not going to put in an amendment here or there. And by the end of that summer, they come up with the process of putting amendments after the Constitution.
Yep.
But today is that day, which I think is kind of, and it speaks to this very issue we're just talking about, how we look at history and it always seems all nice, but just like today, when there's a certain chaos of what has happened, what is the interpretation? That's what it was like.
And not necessarily knowing what this Constitution actually was.
Right.
Like the people today who are very, very libertarian, small government, big government is the enemy. They're very, you know, pro-Constitution, embrace the Constitution because it sets all of these limits on governments. Take it back 200 plus years. Those same people would have been very strong anti-federalists in 1789 because the small government, anti-federal government people were terrified that this Constitution was going to create this model that was going to dominate everything.
The same problem. That's right. Yeah. And North Carolina has really deep roots. And this is another week where an event happens on June 6th. June 6th is a day where we also remember in 1944 D-Day.
D-Day, of course.
And the landing there in Normandy, which sets the stage for the war eventually ending. But there was something else that happened. On June 6th, 1765, a fellow named George Sims, a school teacher, published something that's become known as the Nutbush Address.
That's what I want to be remembered for.
It was really titled An Address to the People of Granville County, but it was in the Nutbush section of this. So it's gotten that, which, you know, we think Nutbush, you're like, oh my gosh, these people are wild or wacky. but what he did is he came up with kind of a reasonable protest against the unfair fees that were being applied to people when they would bring their concerns to court or there were some kind of a judgment lodged against them. But the actual fee that they were supposed to pay under law was exceeded by these fees that all these officials were charging them. And that leads into, eventually, the regulator movement becomes inspired by this. And they form their protest announcements the same way, very reasonable. So you can see these early roots leading into, you know, what we know as the United States came out of people asking questions. Just like today, you know, they asking questions is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's to find out the truth and to find out what's going on. That's what we are seeing today, too.
And I want to get back to James Madison, actually, in 1789. Because you're identifying there with the very beginning of the regulator movement in the 1760s and leading up to the Revolution.
Yes.
You're seeing one of those moments in American history, and you saw it, obviously, in the run-up to the Civil War in the 1800s and in the 1900s with the Civil Rights Movement and all the turmoil in the 50s and 60s, and we're kind of seeing it today with polarization and not just the fact that the country is polarized and people are becoming more and more entrenched, but they're becoming more and more unwilling to see the other side, as it were. And in all three of those cases, ultimately, you know, things were resolved in all three cases with a significant amount of physical conflict and violence.
Yeah.
But ultimately, in the case of 1789 with James Madison, you have a cooler head prevailing in the sense of Madison was one of the framers of the Constitution, father of the Constitution, wrote so much of the document and influenced all the rest of it. He didn't want a Bill of Rights initially. Like, he wasn't opposed to it. He wasn't super in favor of it. Alexander Hamilton had written in the Federalist Papers, which Madison co-signed, we don't need a Bill of Rights. The Constitution is limited just in and of itself. Madison, in spite of that opinion, says, okay, if we can't have a unified country without a Bill of Rights, I want a unified country. So the hell with it. Let's have a Bill of Rights. And he said, and he gets up and not only says that, but then, as you said, like persists in defending it and making sure that
and the smoking gun is he even mentions that says that if we address this, not only was there a sentiment because the people had passed the Constitution in the other states, half had passed it unanimously, half had passed it, but with suggested amendments. But there were these two states, North Carolina and Rhode Island. And he actually says on this date, he says, if we do this, we will address these concerns and bring these other states in. And that's a wonderful testimony to how North Carolina was influential in ensuring that we get what we now know as the Bill of Rights. Now, many of these states already had declarations of rights. So did North Carolina. And there was some substance to the argument by those who put together the Constitution. We have enough coverage. We don't need it. But the real concerns in North Carolina began to say is, well, if we don't spell it out, then what's to prevent someone from using the rights in one state that may differ from the rights in some other state? So very important dates in history. And that's why, you know, D-Day, we think it's not just Allied troops landing or Saving Private Ryan, the movie. But it's really the fact of what people were fighting for. And what would have been the opposite had the Allies not prevailed? And the people who are fighting, if you talk to anybody in the armed services, you will find that they know more about the Constitution and these rights than just about anybody, and are very passionate about that.
Absolutely. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters This Week in History. What else is going on?
Oh, well, I'll tell you.
What else has gone on, I guess I should say.
Well, there's some kind of good days that occur that we celebrate, you know, internationally. The World Oceans Day happens on June 8th to recognize that. It's kind of coincides with Coral Triangle Day, which occurs on June 9th, which is to say that the Earth's oceans, the coral reefs, are so important. It's not entirely coincidental that it also marks the date. This week marks the date when Jacques Cousteau was born.
Yes.
On June 11th, 1910. And he's the guy who predicted the abilities of porpoises and also coined the word aqualung, and he's the guy who actually came up with aqualung or scuba equipment, as we know now, which is kind of cool to think about.
Jethro Tull would have been completely different.
That's right. Well, you know, it's kind of amazing. I remember growing up and seeing those wonderful underwater videos that he and his team would shoot, and we don't see that as much, but our oceans are so important ecologically. So it's a good time to kind of pause. But I should mention that this is a great week. When, especially on Saturday, June 10th, so many incredible things happen. Benjamin Franklin flies a kite, reportedly on this day, and identifies lightning as electricity.
Yes,
and
much
lightning
to his
rods,
chagrin.
Yes. Well, that's right. Well, but he's the guy who also comes up with lightning rods.
Yes.
And, you know, that's protected countless lives, which is kind of amazing.
Have you seen online videos? And I've mentioned this because I just literally, wildly coincidentally, saw an online video of a lightning rod in action, super slow motion.
Oh,
like
cool.
Hundreds of frames per second so they can slow it down and see, like, a thing of lightning, like, shooting up from the lightning rod as the lightning comes down from the cloud, so they actually connect in between the two.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to watch.
Gosh.
There's a couple different YouTube videos where you can watch lightning striking a lightning rod in very, very slow motion, and it's beautiful. Like, all of these little forks of lightning come down. Anyway.
Can't wait
for
the next
neither here
storm.
Nor
yeah,
there,
no,
but Ben Franklin.
We'll all be
looking
at this going, oh, that sounds so cool.
Yeah.
Well, that Saturday, June 10th is when the first ballpoint pen was patented in 1943. Can you imagine? People are still using,
like,
you know, dipping ink. That's right. They didn't have that, which is kind of Alcoholics Anonymous, 1935. First radio broadcast of a national presidential convention, 1924.
Wow.
Which is kind of amazing to think about.
Yeah.
First envelope with a window was patented by an American inventor. And we're all like, we see those go, oh no.
Oh, it's junk mail. Yep. Or a bill, one or the
That's
other.
That's right. But this is also a time when 1692, June 10th, is when Bridget Bishop was hanged for witchcraft in Salem, Massachusetts, one of 20, and that was the hysteria that grips the time.
Yep.
And then I think another thing that we at least need to mark the date and just realize in talking about hysteria on Monday, June 5th, 1981, is when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention described five cases of a rare form of pneumonia, which usually only affects rare cancer patients, a deadly immune deficiency disease, which later becomes known as AIDS. But the first victims were gay, so the gay men, so they were erroneously, people started to think, oh, it has something to do with gay. And it's like, no.
Now, people still think that.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And it's a terrible thing. And it took years. And, of course, by 2000, with 40 million people worldwide affected by this immune deficiency virus, it suddenly became much more clear that, no, this is not something that was that at all.
Yeah. And
so that's, again, another thing about witchcraft, you know, and accusing people in hysteria.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about it, this kind of brings us full circle to what we were talking about earlier, which
is the
hysteria of polarization and the different people saying, oh, it's this. And, you know, you're thinking, I'm looking at an elephant, and some people are saying it's this thin tail, and others saying it's a big ear and a big foot. And
fighting each other over
right.
it.
That's right. And sometimes we have to take a step back and say, what are we hearing? What is going on? And that's what we do with history, and that's what everybody should be doing.
History Matters with Scott Washington. Check out the archive on our website, chapelboro.com. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron, as always.